Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, boys and girls, Dream Team, welcome one, welcome all. What a finale it was. A mega game in Edinburgh, a thriller in Paris, and a hell of an occasion in Dublin, whichever way you want to cut it. Ireland have surprised, stunned, impressed, and frankly delivered over the last 2 months. What a performance to end on. What a performer alongside for this week's show. Jim Hask, how are you?
Very well, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. Fresh. Source of milk table for two once again.
It is, yes. Where's Tindall?
Well, one doesn't know. One doesn't ask. One just lets
jetting,
him do what he does.
Jetting around, isn't
he? He's at the front of a plane somewhere.
Suckling at the corporate teat, I imagine.
Something like that. No doubt. More from him in due course. It was a hell of a weekend. I know there was lots of rugby going on. You got into quite a lot of it. How was the rest of the
Yeah, it's very
the
good,
overall
thank you.
I was shambles.
I had a quite busy week on that show. DJ'd at Fat Tony's Full Fat Brunch on Saturday.
Which is lively.
Very lively. Took the wife along.
Right. Sand to the beach, you said?
Yeah, very much sand, bringing sand to the beach. Yeah, she perused. There were questions to be asked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I took a few friends as well. They were on good form. And then we went over to the Ned and I DJed in the vault until about 1 a.m. downstairs. It was a good crowd. Everyone was there partying. I did catch a bit of rugby. I tuned in just in time to see Freddie Stewart get red carded.
Yes.
I know people are going to hammer about that. I just want to put my two penny worth in. That was utter fucking bollocks.
Right.
The stupidest, most ridiculous red card I've ever seen in my entire life. It shouldn't have even been a card. I don't understand what is happening. I'm not going to use that age-old phrase that rugby's going soft because player safety is paramount, and that's very important. Stuff like that, just I can't understand why anyone would want to watch our game at the moment.
I do wish you'd get off the fence.
I
sometimes
know,
these
I
splinters
know.
Must be
why
agony.
Don't you have an opinion?
Let's pause on that and come back to that, because what I want to do to start, because we could go anywhere with this, but let's just start with our friends at Honda, and what they've asked us to do week in, week out throughout the course of the Guinness Six Nations is to reflect on the weekend in a single word. This is sort of Honda's post-weekend review, succinct. So I have scribbled down one word.
Yes.
And you have scribbled down one word. Yes. Why don't you fire first?
Okay. Johnny.
Clever. This is actually, and I promise you we don't plan this. Are we allowed to know what I Love USC stands for or not?
Well, I don't think even I could use that level of language.
Right.
But when I basically, the last time I think I played against Johnny Sexton, or maybe it was for England in 2018, but when we our friendship bonded started before the Lions, was we were playing Wasps versus Leinster away.
Yeah.
I tackled him or gave a penalty away, very out of character. And he started giving me shit, so I referred to him as SC.
Not strength and conditioning.
Not strength and conditioning. No. I would say it's one of the most aggressive swear words you could ever come up with joined together.
Right.
It's got something. So the second part is the word that you can't use in America that even they get very perturbed about.
Right.
And Nigel Owens overheard me and told me that I wasn't to use language like that under any circumstances because mother and children were watching, and where did I learn it from? And when I said my mother, he said he didn't believe me.
Right.
So that, unfortunately, whenever we correspond, we always call each other that term.
SC. To prove that we are on the similar plane, you've gone Johnny. I've said Sexton,
yes,
Johnny, Sexton,
Johnny
Sexton, Sexton.
With the cash.
With a little dollar bill through the S as well, because frankly, the man is nothing but cash money right now.
We heard about, I mean, when Shane Horgan came on as well, he alluded to something we've never actually gone back and revisited, the fact that the Ireland players are on mental cash.
Yes, and well looked after.
And well looked after, and they're bending all the rules, and like salary caps don't really count. There's a load of stuff that people haven't really paid attention to, because I was like, can we just delve into that? Johnny Sexton, I would love to see his bank balance, because it would be substantial.
What is very interesting, and we'll come on to this a bit later on, because we will talk England, of course, but in the here and in the now, we like to go in the chronology of good, bad and rugby. Let's deal with the good. These things don't just come together by accident, because you've said Johnny, I've said Sexton. Let's bring in the man himself, ladies and gentlemen. The man who has lifted the Guinness Six Nations trophy, the Grand Slam, the Triple Crown in 2023. The man who has become the record point scorer in the tournament, overtaking a certain Ronan O'Gara. It's the Ireland skipper, the man of the moment, Jonathan Sexton. Welcome to you. Many, many congratulations, first things first. Where are you at? How's the head? How's the hip? Where is the sort of the body overall relative to the overall delight, excitement and satisfaction?
Yeah, head not in the best place. We had good couple of nights really. Body also not in great shape. Picked up an injury at the end of the game, which isn't like me. But look, I'll take it. You know, hopefully the injury won't be too bad. I've got to go see a couple of people about it, but hopefully, fingers crossed, I can get back in a few weeks.
SC, how are you, Chief? It's good to see you, mate. You're looking sexy and younger as ever.
Yeah, once I keep these greys out of my hair, I get my hair cut every week now. So once I keep the greys out, I'm all right.
Have you been using this as an excuse to get off the piss? Or are you having a little rest bite and then going out again tonight? Or are you trying to be super professional?
No, I am. I'm on a break at the moment. The lads are currently on it somewhere in Dublin. So I'll meet up with them later. I've got to meet my brother, who was coach of the Irish under-20s, who won the Grand Slam. So we've arranged to go for dinner tonight, the two of us. So I'll catch them later.
A little Grand Slam family celebration, isn't it?
Raining silverware.
I know, you couldn't make it up. It's been a very special weekend in our house, yeah.
Who has been leading the charge in Dublin from the team, the squad, over the last few days? Or is that classified information?
Well, a lot of the boys went back to their clubs straight away this morning. Like, you know, Munster have a big game. A lot of the Leinster boys are off this week, but a lot of the Ulster guys went back as well. So it seems to be Mac Hansen leading the charge, which probably isn't that surprising if you've seen any of his interviews and how he comes across. He's a bit of a mad one, Mac. But he's been great for us on the pitch and off the pitch. He's been a character, so he's leading the charge.
Very, very special moments. Give us a little bit of insight, because there was some amazing sort of imagery at the end of the game around you specifically, but what were the moments that you will treasure? I don't know how much of you can remember, but the moments in the change room, the moments with the family, etc. I mean, how much were you drinking in as much as you possibly could?
A huge amount. Like, you know, the bit that I probably missed was coming off the pitch, because I was... You know, I'm very keen to obviously finish the season with Leinster strongly, and to pick up that injury, I was chatting to the doc on the way off, and I kind of didn't really soak in what the supporters were doing for me at the time, and I let that totally pass me by. But the rest of it, I soaked it up. You know, I don't know if I'll ever play in the Aviva again in an Irish jersey. Hopefully, I will. Hopefully, I'll play in one of the summer games before the World Cup. But you know, you want to cherish every moment you have, and it was definitely an incredibly special day. Like, to have all family and friends there to do it at home is really special. You know, we did it, obviously we won it in 2018 Grand Slam, but you know, when you play away from home, you get like two tickets. You know, your family fight out and you get two of your family at the game, whereas to have everyone there at the weekend, it just makes it very special for us.
Johnny, obviously you are, you know, the ultimate professional. Everyone we've talked to about yourself with this Irish squad always talks about what an instrumental man you are. I've seen how passionate you are on the training field. But actually, during this Six Nations in particular, before the games, during the anthems, I've probably seen more emotion from you than any other time in your career. Did you kind of feel how special this Six Nations was? Do you feel like you've been more emotional than usual?
I would say so, yeah, definitely. I suppose that comes with probably a little bit of realization that it's the last few times. You also, you know, you got your kids in the crowd, they're a little bit older now, they're understanding things. But also we had a really special build up to the French game. You know, I spoke about it after the game, where we spoke about sort of the troubled times in Ireland. Brian O'Driscoll came in with Craig Doyle and you know, they explained to us some of the things that went on in Ireland and how the Irish jersey stayed united through those troubles, which is very unique. Every other sports team in the country split up. They went north and south. So we had an incredibly special build-up. So that was part of the emotion in that one as well. But most of the time, you're trying to focus on the game. Sometimes you can get dragged into the emotion of it all from time to time.
Can I ask you about the kids? What have they made of it all? And how have they handled you, the spotlight, the attention, the glory, etc.?
They're starting to get it now. Like, it's that's the other bit for me is Luca. He's 8, 9 in the summer, and he's really get understanding it. And, you know, he's the most pressure I get during the week is from him, because he's saying, he knows he only comes on the pitch if we win. You don't get to do a lap of honour if you lose. So he's putting pressure on me during the week, making sure, he's my biggest critic as well. So he doesn't, he's not too happy when I miss a kick or miss a tackle or whatever. So it's really special to have, you know, him there and the girls, but especially him, because he's that little bit older and he understands what's going on. And it's probably a big part of me still playing, really, like, you know, to get to see your dad play for Ireland, I presume, is special through his eyes, but to get to play in front of your son is pretty special as well. So
good on you. They were very, very special scenes. What did you make of the game itself? And I don't know whether you will watch that one back, whether you need to watch it back, but give us a sense of what it felt like as the 80 minutes unfolded.
You know, we made more mistakes, I think, in the first half than we had in most of the championship, I reckon, in terms of turnovers, forced passes, you know, unforced errors. Now, in fairness to England, England came with a really aggressive game plan, like in terms of line speed. They kept us in our own half for the majority, made it tough for us at the breakdown. All the areas that we would pride ourselves on, you know, capitalising on, you know, entry into their 22, coming away with points, we didn't get away with anything, really. Like, so we'll have to go and have a look at it in terms of the World Cup and make sure that we learn from it, because it was a high pressure game and we didn't really produce our best on the day. But I think credit to England. You know, I said before the game to the lads that this is the best English team that was picked in this championship, in my opinion. I don't want to criticise Steve Borthwick in any way, shape or form. I loved working under him with the Lions. I think he's a great coach, but I looked at their team sheet and I said, lads, this is a proper team coming over here now. Manu back, Owen back, you know, some of the guys up front that were coming back. So we knew it was going to be really tough, and it certainly was.
Can I ask you about a couple of specific moments? So we did a show last week with Shane Horgan, and you were obviously tied coming into this game with Rog as the all-time record point scorer in the Six Nations. And Shane said that when you go past Rog, he will be seething, spitting, furious, etc. Did you have a little thought for your old mucker from years gone by as the points went through the posts?
I did. Look, I spoke to Rog last week. It was funny that we were speaking when we were tied. I haven't heard from him yet in terms of the record.
That says it all.
Yeah. Now, honestly, the one time I did think of Rog was at the end of the game and the reception that I got, and I really felt for him, because he was a legend of Irish rugby and he didn't get to finish on his own terms in a green shirt, and he deserved it as much as anyone. You know, you look at Brian, the send-off Brian got, the send-off, I suppose, Paulie obviously finished with an injury, but he got a great send-off in terms of winning his last Six Nations game and all that. So I did feel for him in those moments, and he did deserve it.
You've got to enjoy yours, though, nevertheless. I know the rivalry will probably come back in some shape or form in years to come. The other thing I've got to ask you about is the jig, which has been absolutely trounced by Andy Farrell. A little hop, skip and a jump. Was that... talk us through. Was that rehearsed, practiced, or was that just elation?
Spring? I just jumped. The people are calling it a dance and stuff. I don't buy it was a dance. I'm not a dancer. Now, look, I knew it was a huge kick. It wasn't to win the game, but it was to go 3 scores clear with 10 minutes to go. So I'd also spent about half an hour working with Dave Aldred from that exact spot a couple of weeks previous. It's just mad how it worked, that it was came down to that kick. And I probably got too happy in the moment. I gave it a little bit of a jump. I lost the head, basically.
There'll be memes for years to come from that. Do you want to dive in?
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, obviously I've been lucky enough to play against Irish sides, and John, I've known you for a little while. This group in particular seems closer than ever, and it seems like a real genuine kind of affection. I mean, just how hard has Andy Farrell worked at that? Because I know he's an incredible motivator. You know, obviously his own career and what he achieved in two sort of two types of rugby was amazing. Just what's his impact been like, and how do you find it's improved everything that we see from this Irish team?
Well, I think if one person has to take credit for this team, it's him. He's revamped everything since the last World Cup. He basically tore everything up and he started again. And we didn't see the benefits of it straight away because it always takes time. Anytime a new coach comes in with new ideas in terms of the environment, even in terms of how we play, it does take time. And we're only starting to see the benefits of it over the last 18 months. But he takes huge, like, this is his vision. He picked young guys in 2019. He kept one or two of the older guys, stood by someone like me, you know, some older guys, like, you know, P, Connor Murray, Keith Earls, kept them in the environment. And but what he's done in terms of rugby wise is just, he's an outstanding coach. You know him, Hask. He knows the game. He knows people. I think the biggest credit I could give him is he hasn't changed one bit from being an assistant to head coach. I think not every coach would do that. They feel that when they become head coach, they have to change in a certain way. They can't have a beer with the lads, or they can't enjoy the party with the lads. But he's been life and soul of the place, even as the head man.
It seems that you know, you've always been a great servant for Ireland, but it seems, you know, even more so recently that you're so important to this team, and that everyone we've spoken to talks about your kind of your coaching role as well as your kind of on-field role. Is that the kind of freedom that Andy's given you? Because whatever the chemistry is, it seems to be getting the best out of you. You know, you seem to have buried any kind of demons you had. I know, speaking to you after the Lions selection stuff, you were bitterly disappointed, you know, the previous tour, but you just seem to be going from strength to strength. I mean, why is that with Andy?
Yeah, well, he empowers the players, definitely. And it's not just me, it's the leadership group. You know, it's expanding every year. There's new guys coming in when I suppose Andy feels that they deserve to come in. Like, you know, this year, Caelan Darris, Hugo Keenan have come in, obviously very young, relatively inexperienced international rugby, like what, 15, 20 caps, you know, together each. And they've come in and added massively to it. But it's that, it's the environment he's created where everyone has an opinion. You can be yourself. He wants people to be themselves. He's brought in some wild and wonderful characters. Obviously mentioned Mac, and Mac's able to come in and be his strange self and add to the environment, and everyone loves him for it. And, you know, like, I'm saying all this, but I was Joe Schmidt's biggest fan as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not one size fits all. This is what Andy has done, and he's starting to have success with it now. But, like, for me, I love working with Joe as well. So I don't want to sort of say that everything was bad under him. We had some great success with him.
For sure. And we'd never take it that way. I quickly want to ask you as well, because Andy is, I mean, we've got a massive man crush on Andy in the coach's box when he's wearing his suit. He's got a lot
very
of good things
sexy
going in that regard. It looks incredibly sexy. But Mike Catt, Paul O'Connell, Simon Easterby as well, who just talk us through the blend and their roles. Mike Catt in particular is someone who I presume you work quite closely with, but we don't hear a lot about from, except just quietly getting on with it. Would that be about right?
Well, obviously, Andy takes most of the plaudits because he's the head coach, and it's been his vision that has come to fruition. But the other coaches, you know, Andy would say himself, you're only as good as those guys around you. And he's got Caddy, who he's known for so long, with being a player and coach, and he's come in and done a really good job. Paul O'Connell has been huge. It's like the good cop, bad cop, you know, with Faz and John Fogarty. Simon Easterby, Simon in charge of the defence. He changed his role from forwards coach to defence, but has been equally as good. So look, we're blessed to have the coach. I don't get to deal too much with Fogs. He's scrum coach. So I leave him to it. They're a great team, and they get on really well together, and the boys get on really well with the coaches as well. So it's a good team.
Definitely.
You mentioned Matt Hansen a couple of times. Just quickly, are we talking Johnny May weird, or like how weird are we talking? Because I've only ever seen him like scoring tries. I know there's a video on your Instagram, you know, doing some sort of cap twist handshake thing, you know. But are we talking mad or just a little bit mad?
I can't compare him to anyone. I've never come across anyone like him before. But honestly, he's added so much to the place. On the field, obviously, but off the field, entertainment as well has been second to none.
No hints of Sean O'Brien in there? No, no.
a little, like an Australian-born version of Sean O'Brien. He's a good character. It's the ones you need in your squad. This is good.
We can't let you go without a question about September, October time. Is that for next week, the week after? Or how quickly have you turned thoughts to One more big dance.
Like the World Cup is what, like 4 years ago we were thinking about it. You know, when I signed on to after the last World Cup, it was with a view to try and get to this World Cup, try and stay in the team, try and stay fit, try and stay, you know, good enough to keep getting picked for Ireland. And I suppose it's not too far away now. So it's not something that you just start thinking about now. It's been in the back of our minds for a long time, but we've had to focus on different things up to now. And now we can, once we get into Irish camp again, it's all geared towards the World Cup. So it's sort of nice to be able to say that. Obviously, you've got a big end of the season with Leinster to come. But yeah, it'll roll around pretty quick, I think.
And hunted, not the hunter. Does that sit comfortably on broad, wise old shoulders like yours?
Well, I don't have any shoulders, so I don't have to...
Leave that to someone else.
It's just
else.
A head with some slopes, isn't it?
A pencil.
A ketchup bottle, as they say. Or, do you remember this, the Hask in 2013 and the Lions? We were playing in Queensland against the Reds, and I was on the bench, and one guy, he was just abusing me for the whole game. And Paul O'Connell was on the bench with me, and he was absolutely loving it. But I was just about to come on, and he was going, Sexton. And I was refusing to turn around. Eventually, I turned around, and he just shouted, "You got shoulders like a snake."
Mate, please, there's no way you can come back from that. You just got to go, thank you, sir.
But the worst thing about it was all the bench started laughing. Paul O'Connell absolutely loved it.
Shoulders like a snake.
Brutal.
Yeah.
But do you guys feel now, given what you've achieved this year and the journey you've been on, winning in New Zealand, etc., have you got everything you need?
Well, we've got the coaches. We've got a real good team environment. We've got great sort of camaraderie. It's almost like a club team kind of atmosphere in the camp. And so we got the basis of doing it. We've got obviously some great players as well. But what we need to do is we need to learn how to play really well under pressure. We didn't quite nail it against England, but we did it against someone like France, for example. Realizing that it's going to be pretty tough. We probably have the toughest draw that Ireland have ever had at a World Cup. We've got South Africa, Scotland, Tonga, who are getting so many guys back through this new repatriation rule or whatever it's called. And, you know, so it's going to be three unbelievably tough pool games. And then if we get through that, we get to play New Zealand or France in the quarterfinals. So
yeah,
it's going to be the hardest World Cup. Any of, you know, even the guys that have been to the World Cup, hardest one by a mile. So we've got to keep our feet on the ground and realize that we're still, being number one in the world doesn't count for anything come World Cup time.
But when you've won it, just say you've done it the hardest way ever, so it's not a problem.
Well, that would be the way to do it, wouldn't it? But like, I presume once we get together, everything will be about trying to get as fit as possible, trying to get the preseason right, you know, nailing that preseason. You know, going into a World Cup is so important. You got to get it 100% right to go in the best shape possible. And then it'll be get out of your pool. And then once we get out of that, we can worry about it.
We know what your work ons are, isn't it? A lot of shoulder weights, a lot of lat raises, a lot of shoulder press.
The funny thing is, I used to have a good shoulder press. I used to lift more than anyone the shoulder press, and no one could understand why.
There we go.
Because you're probably using your spine instead of shoulders. Is this the most fun you have had in an Irish shirt? Because it looks like it is to me.
Yeah, 100%. Like it does come with a little bit of experience in terms of knowing that you got to make the most of it with the, you know, last couple of years, and you got to make the most of it, definitely. But it's the best environment I've been involved with. It's the best group of lads I've been involved with. I think it's the best playing group I've been involved with. I've been blessed to play with, like, you know, Ireland's greatest players, O'Driscoll, O'Connell, O'Gara, all these guys. But, you know, these guys are right up there with them.
On that, and this is the final question because we must let you go. You need a couple of Nurofen and an early night by the sound of it. But Ireland's greatest, Andy Farrell said, "You are Ireland's greatest." There was a very good article today, actually, in The Telegraph from Charlie Morgan saying, for an Ireland team that has sustained its position as number one in the world, has gone to New Zealand and won, has claimed a Grand Slam, a Triple Crown, etc., and all that goes with it, and you have been the key driver in that, that makes you Ireland's greatest. And there'll be a lot of people in Ireland who would nod knowingly and put the thumbs up. And to that, you would say what?
Well, I've never liked these conversations in any sport because you can't compare someone that played 10 years ago with someone that plays now. You can't compare a second row with an out half. You can't compare a centre with a second row. So it's all opinion, and it's all, you know, I just want to be able to, at the end of my career, look back and say, I got the most out of myself, that I helped get the most out of the teams that I was involved with. And it's up to other people to talk about that stuff. It doesn't bother me too much because, you know, you hear it in other sports, soccer, basketball, you know, and you're just comparing, chalk and cheese. Like, rugby is so unique because everyone's so different. So that's my answer.
I wouldn't expect you to say anything else. If I'd asked that question to Hask, he'd have gone, yeah, the greatest sounds about right.
Yeah, sounds about right. I'm the best in my playing ability bracket.
Yeah, which is retired.
I'm the greatest in my zone.
Johnny, we mentioned the fact there is another big dance to come, so it's not farewell and congratulations, but it's been an absolutely remarkable campaign for you. It's been an absolute joy to watch. Even as sort of bruised Englishman, we can really buy into what is a very, very special Ireland team with you right at the centre of it. Thank you so much for dialing in. Good luck with the recovery, the rehab, both with the head and the hip. I hope they both recover quickly enough. We'll see you on a touchline soon, and we'll hopefully catch up before the big dance in France.
Thanks, Alex. Cheers, Hask.
And there he goes, as they always do. Ireland's greatest?
Yes, I think you can't look past that. And I do wholeheartedly agree with him when you look at these kind of... And I we're the only thing in kind of nature that puts numbers on things. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, no other animal on the planet concerns itself with number of caps, most money, greatest this, greatest that, top 10 of that. It's really... You know, we always put our stall out with that stuff. And I do agree with him. Sometimes it can be a little bit arbitrary. But if you look at his career, look at what he's done, look at how he's done it, how instrumental he is in that Irish team, you know, coming back from injuries a few times, the good days and the bad days, you know, a couple of, you know, awful World Cup moments. I think, yeah, he's got to have done that, you know. And I think... just numbers wise, it just makes sense. He won't care about it, and ultimately, those things don't matter. But it's nice to be talked about in such a light. You know, it's something that someone like me would never experience, and most people, you know, the 99% never ever get referred to as the greatest ever.
Purely sort of making this up as we go, I reckon O'Driscoll was responsible for dragging Ireland into professionalism. They were a shambles until he came along as a true great and demanded higher levels from them. O'Connell brought an intensity and a steel to Ireland, which was, we're here now, let's prove that we belong here. But I think Sexton has been responsible for taking what was a good team and cementing them as number one in the world.
Yes.
So those are different sort of elements, but he probably stands as the most influential figure in Ireland's greatest team.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think as well, because of the, you know, someone like Brian O'Driscoll, it was so supremely talented in a set of skill, with a skill set that, again, people, you could look far and wide to find anything like that. I mean, that training ground try he scored for the Lions, I still cannot get my head around, you know, chipping it, volleying it up to yourself, catching it, and then no look backhander out the right hand to a guy that he can't even see who scores. Yeah. It's like you can't even comprehend that. I just think with Johnny, the all round ability from 10 to lead, to raise standards, to perform, to come back under pressure, to have the mindset he has. You know, when we've interviewed him before under, I think it was a different guy's. I don't think it was for Good Bad Rugby.
No, it was for this.
Well, it was for this. I can't remember. Yeah. Do so many podcasts, can't remember.
Yeah, it was for this.
And he, you know, he talked about kind of how hard he is on himself.
Yes.
To have that kind of mindset as well, to constantly look to the next thing. You know, for him to walk off the field and be concerned about injury, obviously, because that's the first thing you focus on, but to miss the fact the entire Aviva stood up and applauded one of their greatest ever servants, to always be on to the next job, you can understand the way it is. And I think he should be celebrated, but he won't care about that. You know, there's no way he's walking around at home in like a pair of like white budgie smugglers with legend on the front having a seagull rating himself.
Like you.
Like me.
Like yours truly. Can we just put, and no one will
let, I remember to empty the dishwasher and I'm fucking awarded myself a medal. Do you know what I mean?
Hello, the postman.
Yeah.
I know they would never be able to do this, but I can't remember who I was talking about the other day. Can you imagine what it will be like if Ireland win the Webb Ellis Trophy? Can you imagine if, on whatever it is, the 27th of October, as the full-time whistle goes, Johnny Sexton, Peter O'Mahony, Tadhg Furlong, Gary Ringrose are world champions?
I think it would be a very fitting crown for them. I think it would be so good for rugby. I think it would be, you know, like a same thing with France's resurgence. You know, it's really kind of what I think makes rugby exciting at the moment. And I watched the game on the weekend, and I wanted Ireland to win. I don't really have that kind of mindset that most fans would think. I just want the best team on the day to win, and the characters and stuff to come to the fore. And I think the Irish team plays in a certain way. They look like they're enjoying themselves. They're coached by a very, very, very competent coach in Andy Farrell, who, I don't know, I was sort of partly dreamy about it last night, weirdly, because I think I knew we were going to do this interview today. And I think, you know, some people, as Johnny said, if you're a support coach, you know, some people take that time to transition and aren't born for it. I think Andy Farrell was born to be a head coach, you know, and I saw Andy Goode kind of talking about, you know, where are all those England coaches now, you know, Lancaster, Roundtree, Farrell, Catt, and that if we kept them together, how good it would have been. And I don't think that's the case. I don't think the chemistry was right necessarily between them. I don't think that the focus was right. But it's interesting to see that when they're separated, just how much quality there was within that group.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were right for England. But I think Andy Farrell has, you know, has shown that he's born to lead. And I think he was always going to flourish as a head man. And I think him as like a Lions coach and, you know, I think he'd do brilliantly, and I think he's really, really shown what he can do. And I think if Ireland lifted it, I think it's so believable now. Yeah. You know, before it would have been pie in the sky. They genuinely, I don't think they have that kind of implosion in them anymore. I just don't see it. I just see them really professional. They've got a nice balance of youth and senior heads, and I just think they're very, very exciting.
I'm going to say something that's going to absolutely get thrown back and blown back at me. Anyone but New Zealand or South Africa. And I don't say that for any other reason than I just would love to see a fresh shirt lifting the trophy. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I just think that the tournament's crying out for that.
It's crying out for a new champion and new celebrations and new heroes to be made in lands where I think they've won three each now.
Yes.
All Blacks and South Africa. Don't come at me for that. For any other reason than something a little fresh.
My investment in this is, again, it is genuinely objective. You know, I think people have written off New Zealand. I think they're going to get sorely mistaken.
Still 3-1 with the bookies.
How they're going to do the World Cup. South Africa, you know, I think Australia are going to be right up there.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be the closest World Cup ever. And I think probably the most exciting. I would say, for the good of the game, another Northern Hemisphere side winning it, and someone like Ireland with the stories, the fairy tales, and the fact that Irish rugby, you know, is so important over there, you know.
Yeah, in unifying the country.
Yeah, and yeah. I just think it was also just for the popularity, you know, some of the biggest games that we have when the Heineken Cup was the Heineken Cup were against your Irish side. So look, I think I want them to win more than anyone, really, because I think they're going to do brilliantly.
Well done, Ireland. Well done, Johnny Sexton, Andy Farrell, et al. It's going to be a lot of fun watching and plotting, not just Ireland, but all of the form lines going into the tournament, which is, as Johnny said, fast approaching. Shall we deal with England? Because it's very interesting to sort of the reaction to it. It was a significant step up from the defeat against France. There was bravery, courage. Wasn't a huge amount of flair or necessarily kind of ambition, but it was much more England, really. Was that the foundation now, the benchmark, the base layer for Steve Borthwick to build on?
Yes, I think it was. I think the fact that a couple of players changed in the starter lineup, but there wasn't a drastic difference between, you know, those England sides for France and for Ireland. So you've got to ask yourself, what was the difference? Because it can't have done too much in the shortened period of time. So what was the difference? I think it was the mental side more than anything. Again, I've always banged that drum. You know, what is it they tweaked in the week? And was it some self-belief? Was it a bit more determination? Was it, you know, a bit more kind of sort of, you know, anger about them? Which is what sometimes you have, or was it because they felt their backs against the wall, like we saw against New Zealand when they turned the game around in 15 minutes or whatever they did before in the autumn before Eddie got sacked? I think all these teams have that. It's just how you consistently unlock that. And I think that will have proved to them that if they do and play with a certain intensity and they build from that, that's the right way to go. I think they'll be very frustrated with how the Six Nations goes. I think there is a big talent pool there. I just think at the moment they're probably not, you know, it's very hard to perform as an England team when your back's against the wall. You know, written media, fans, it's, you know, you're very, very exposed as a, as an international team in England. And I think sometimes it's hard to get over the line, and you want to believe in what you're doing. But if results aren't going your way, maybe you're sort of having some personal stuff around your own performances that can eat into you. But I think they certainly look much, much more together and much more determined, and had a bit of, you know, a real bit of shit about them. You know what I mean? They wanted to get in, get stuck in. And I think they've definitely got to build from there. But I don't, I think you can take, accept anything less than what was given on the weekend. That has to be the kind of the blueprint for it.
Interesting when you were talking about Andy Farrell and, you know, where are all these England coaches? Is this England team, so this is the third year in a row they've only managed two wins,
yeah,
which for the richest union, I think there's some debate over the number of players and whether France have now got more. England's certainly grassroots numbers are declining quite dramatically. There's a lot made of England's wealth and resources, etc. But the question, I suppose, I think we were touching on it last week, is this England team suffering at the moment as a crop of players, or is it suffering because of the system? And I suppose the way you could potentially rephrase that is, if you dropped Andy Farrell in charge of England, would they suddenly be winning Grand Slams?
No, because you dropped Andy Farrell into Ireland and it took time to build.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, more often than not, when you look at kind of very famous coaches, and the guy from the San Francisco 49ers who won four Super Bowls, or the 49ers won four Super Bowls in 3 years, you know, his win record...
Four Super Bowls in 3 years.
Sorry, that is impressive.
That is impressive.
Yeah, sorry.
Wow. Double bubble on one of them.
I think it was...
3-4?
No, I think it was 4-5, something like that. Right. But the point was that his winning record in his first year was the same winning record as the coach who got fired the year before. Now, if they hadn't believed in him, they would have never gone on to win those Super Bowls and create the dynasty that they had. So sometimes it takes a while for...
Alex Ferguson, another classic example. One goal away from being sacked.
Yes.
And then he survived, and that was that.
And that's my point. Is that I think Arsene Wenger as well, when he came in, he came in and addressed the England team once, and he talked about his sort of first mentality, and, you know, this complete football that they tried to play. It was very hard for a team to adjust to it, and sometimes it takes time. And I think Andy Farrell is a shining example of that. I don't think it's down to coaching. I don't think miracles happen overnight. I think, for example, when Eddie came in, there was a good foundation that had been laid. I think what was missing was probably much more psychological and fun-wise and kind of purposeful intensity to training and a feel-good factor that then elevated that team. And because winning breeds winning. And I think that harnessing of what you had, so that was a short turnaround. But more often than not, it takes a bit of time. You know, the thing that holds England back, I think, is clubs. I think that's a, you know, there's a consistent reason that why England aren't number one in the world. You know, this isn't the most popular sport in the UK. So that whole idea of you know, we've got all the bet, it's just not the case.
It's not the most popular sport in Ireland.
No,
it is in New Zealand.
Yes,
probably. Well, but
South Africa.
I think. Playing numbers wise, football is bigger than rugby in South Africa.
Oh, really?
And in Australia, it's fifth or sixth, if not seventh or eighth.
But that's probably why they're not doing that well for us.
Well, very true. But...
All I'm trying to say is, I just think there is a real belief that because of all the resources, that suddenly means that you have the best. I just don't think it makes sense. I think the amount of schools that play it, I think club rugby, feeder clubs, I just don't think that infrastructure's there across the whole board to get the very best players. I think we have a very, very good set of players. I think that it's very hard as an England coach, having seen it, witnessed it, you know, the condition you get players in when you have them under your control is very varied in terms of conditioning, in terms of the intensity that they have at clubs. It is completely kind of subjective to that particular club. I think a lot of time coaches are spent building them back up to the international standard. I think that, you know, there's a lot of politics, a lot of media in the UK which interferes a lot of that stuff. And I think also this team in particular is the start of a journey with a new set of coaches that have no emotional connection to a lot of those guys. Some they do from former Leicester, but some are starting out, you know, afresh. And I think it just takes time to build. And I didn't believe England were under crisis under Eddie Jones. I don't believe they are now. I believe it's taking time. And unfortunately, I think the landscape has moved on very quickly in all the other areas. I think France are playing a type of rugby that, you know, we're some way off. Ireland are playing an even better type of rugby, some way off. I think we're there or thereabouts with the other teams. I think it's going to take a bit of time and a bit of work. But the beauty is there is a lot of time now between the World Cup that you're going to you've got exposure to those players. And more often than not, England have done well, especially in the last World Cup, because they spent more time together away from their clubs. There was a consistent standard. And I think Steve Waugh and his coaches will be able to unlock much more from this team.
Let's dive into two of the bigger themes that fell out of the game itself, and actually one of them from the tournament. I know you've touched on this already, but the red card to Freddie Stewart, the most talked about moment of any game throughout the tournament. He was polite and humble in being issued the red card. I've got milliseconds, ref, how can I change my line? And Owen Farrell's exclamation of a red sort of told you what the thoughts were on the pitch. We have to mention the fact that Hugo Keenan was taken off and failed his HIA. So there was, you know, there was an impact because of the challenge that took place. But even so, with everything that we know about the game right now, give me a slightly less sweary reaction to that red card.
Look, obviously, thoughts with Hugo Keenan. I hope he's okay. You never want to see that. I think that's completely irrelevant. Completely irrelevant because he got injured because of that. You know, if someone takes your head off, I can understand that. If someone does something deliberate, I can understand that. If someone is reckless, I can understand that. Freddie Stewart could not have done anything different. Not one possible thing he could have done differently. He literally covered himself up because, funny enough, he didn't want someone running straight into his midriff and breaking his ribs. I just don't understand it. I understand how much pressure referees are on. I understand that Razzy Erasmus and social media has made refereeing almost a thankless task. And because people have no sense of boundaries, are probably messaging Jaco Pyper and all sorts of things. You know, he doesn't deserve that. But it was utter nonsense. I wouldn't even give him a yellow. I would just be like, that's a rugby collision. Like, what was he supposed to do? What would you like the game to do differently? Like, if I run into someone's knee and I get knocked out, whose fault's that? You know, I'm sure thoughts and prayers will be with me, but it's not my fault. Well, maybe not. But most people, you know what I mean? I just don't think that's relevant. I think that's, you're weaponising the unfortunate nature of a sport that someone's got injured off the back of it that you'd never wish for. Has no impact on that at all. You should have looked at it and gone, yeah, that's unfortunate. It's rugby. Move on.
So I think that's very interesting because, I mean, I was one of those who was scratching my head around how we ended up in that situation. I thought Brian Moore actually wrote a very good article today where he said, don't blame the ref. The ref has made the right decisions according to the laws, but it's the laws that are wrong.
Mm.
And I don't quite know how you fix that, but I think two things. One is that as soon as the ball is knocked on, everybody's mindset shifts. So suddenly you're like, you relax, I would imagine, and therefore so your time frame to get it right diminishes because as you relax, suddenly then Keenan plays on and then you're sort of having to re-react. But I think you're absolutely right. I can't see how Freddie Stewart would have done anything differently.
I just admire his temperament, you know, because I do kind of get sort of flashbacks to, you know, things I did in my career and things where I got it wrong, and I did get it wrong a few times. And
water bottle.
The water bottle. Well, no, that... that's not what I glad to
get
wrong.
Water.
Yeah, that was only because you literally can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like,
but
he did though. The referee did absolutely nothing. Too busy red carding people now for non-events. Should have fucking red carded Joe Marler. But
let it go.
I won't. But things like, I look about other things like I tripped the guy up and I hit Jamie Roberts in the head and unfortunately the guy for Saracens, was second row, now would have been a straight red card. And there's the moments like that, you just think, okay, you know, got that badly wrong, and that was deserving. I think now, if I got caught for something like Freddie Stewart, I don't know how I would have reacted. Maybe it's because I'm not involved and I'm not under that subjective kind of, you know, team first, we're all polite rugby players, you don't insult the referee. I just think I would have sat on the floor like Ronaldo with my hands on my head and just gone, I'm not fucking leaving.
Right.
I just would have gone mad. I just would have gone, you've literally ruined an international. You've cost me a red card for nothing. And you've managed to completely fuck that between you and your fourth official. And I just don't understand it. Because someone ran into my elbow and knocked himself out, that's awful, nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
I don't understand how the mitigation and understanding that this is a collision sport and that, you know, I said it before, we need to get better people looking after players, shouldn't be doing contact in training, it should be managed, rest time should be, all that stuff should be managed. if an injury happens on the field, it's not always at someone's fault. And I just don't understand how that can happen. And it's all of taking out, you shouldn't be allowed to be playing slow motion replays on the big screens. Put them on like NFL and on a side screen so the guy can go look at
it in real time.
Play it real time. It's got everything that's worse.
Because one of the questions I'm going to ask is, how do you prevent this? Because rugby is tying itself in knots. We can all name half a dozen, 10, 15 red card incidents in the last three, four, 5 years, which have got people scratching their heads.
How mad is it how many red cards you get these days? When I think about it, I got red carded. Did I get red? I think I've got red carded once, maybe twice. But that was pretty like unknown.
How many England players have been sent off recently? Manu, Elliot Daly, Charlie Yules, Freddie Stewart. But I can remember, so Mike Burton got sent off.
Lewis Moody was the first England player.
No, he wasn't. Oh. Mike Burton got sent off in 1970-something against Australia.
When you were a young boy.
When I was, actually even before I was born. And then I remember Tim Rodber getting sent off in 1994 against Eastern Province or something on a summer tour. And when Rodber got sent off, everyone was absolutely gobsmacked. They were jaw-dropped. This just did not happen. And he got properly... You know, the army officer got really stuck in, and I think it probably cost him the England captaincy because it was that big a kind of incident. Now it's like three or four
and
a
look,
year.
I don't want to say, because I think this is very crass, very stupid, that rugby has gone soft. This is not the case at all. There is obviously a risk, but we are getting away from the fact that this is a violent game where unfortunate accidents happen. And I just think you have to take so many decisions out of the crowd's hands and pressure, referees' hands. You have to add clarity. You have to progress the laws of the game to the state of the game we're in now. Otherwise, you're just going to keep ruining it. And just because someone gets injured in an incident doesn't mean anyone's at fault. And that, I think a lot of that time is gravity is put onto, oh, well, he had to go off. Okay? But that has nothing to do with it. You know, it doesn't matter. This is the nature of the game. Now, if someone does something crass, stupid, or even, you know, to the left of the law, where, he, you know, say Freddie Stewart had run into him on purpose, you could clearly see that. There's nothing he could have done. So I really think that we need to sort it out. And somebody needs to take, you know, the thing by the scruff of the neck and sort it out. Because I remember... when we did that stuff with Progressive Rugby, you know, we were talking about kind of, I got some referee, there was some referee guy on it, I don't know, some old bloke, who was kind of trying to say that if the referees actually refereed to the law, half of this stuff wouldn't happen. You know, players supporting their body weight in breakdowns and, you know, certain that the laws have always been pretty clear, but referees don't play to it. They have an open interpretation. I don't know if there's any truth in that. But I do think we just need to change a few things because it's just so stupid. And I would love to see a graph of the exponential growth of red cards because it must have gone one season, boom, like that, and must be upward...
last 3-4 years. And the reasons for it are 100% right. We have to look after the players. But you repeatedly say rugby has got to recognise what it is, which is a collision contact, aggressive sport played by people who know what they're getting into. And I think... the incident on Saturday was probably not aligned with that. And the reason I think it's a real issue is we are going to have a red card in a World Cup. So we had it in the Women's World Cup final. Yeah. Lydia Thompson got set up. Now, I wouldn't argue that that wasn't a red card, but in the aftermath, she has said the feeling I had, and actually I want to walk away from the game. And if Freddie Stewart had been sent off for that in a World Cup semi-final and England had been dispatched, you know, that is... life-changing stuff.
Well, remember David Beckham in the football?
Well, yeah.
And how he
burning effigies in West Ham.
Wayne Rooney, same thing, Ronaldo got him off. You know, these guys, you know, luckily both of them came back.
But I can understand that because what they did was probably wrong.
Yeah, agreed.
When you're sent off for things that you legitimately can say, I am really struggling to offer any alternative to the actions which I have done, then I think that it's the problem with rugby at the moment is it is making life very hard for itself.
Well, you know, obviously I understand referees have autonomy and I think they get lambasted when they do make decisions. But why just look at that and go, just go on the mic, go stand on me. That's nothing. I don't even want to review it. Go away. Just get away. Have some fucking balls. I'd rather see referees do like a, you know, like almost like a Niger, where they kind of they make an opinion, they make a decision and back themselves, as opposed to going through all the bureaucracy of what they've got to do, fanning around looking, going, oh, you know, you have to ask the right worded code question to get the right answer. You know, when you just go, well, I've looked at that, I'll go on the side screen, look at it with your headphones on, talk to the bloke and go, I just don't think there's anything here. In my mind, there's no way he could have done anything different. I'm actually not going to give anything away. I'm just going to give a for the knock on and that'll be it. I wouldn't even give a penalty away. The guy ran into it. Like, it's just a collision. Like, I genuinely don't understand what else could have happened.
Yeah, well, I'm with
unless
you.
There's like a fourth angle where, you know, like Freddie Stewart cheekily, you know, cheekily looks in the way and runs and elbows him on the head on purpose, then he deserves to get red card. But I don't really think that happened.
I don't think people are pinning the blame on paper, the referee. Yeah, I do agree. I mean, I was thinking, I wonder whether you have a sort of, instead of a TMO, you have a panel, a bit like boxing, and you sort of vote. But then it's, I mean, you're making just hard. I'm terrified that rugby is going to make an ass of itself, and maybe that's too strong. It is going to have an incident which just divides everybody watching. It confuses people who come at it for the first time. It incenses former players because it just isn't able to kind of deal with the reality. Well, I know, but if you do that in a World Cup final in front of 870 million people, what did you make? You wouldn't have listened to the commentary, but I mean, it almost is like a resignation in the commentary box now. They are accepting of the fact that a polarizing incident is just part of rugby now.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of a bit of an apathy to it. And it's a bit like, well, there it is. Shout about
it. I think apathy is a perfect word. I've always said, I think what holds rugby back as being a super popular sport is it's not particularly accessible and people don't really understand it. If I was a fan, as a neutral fan who wasn't really into rugby and I saw that, I wouldn't quite understand what was going on. And it would also be very odd because in most games, well, I mean, at football, you get sort of red and yellow cards, I think, more often, but it's not normally for sort of mad acts of violence.
But normally you can understand why they've been given.
Because also there's so much clear space around them.
And that's the thing, as you've just said around this incident, is your view is, well, they ran into him, play on. Others would have said, yeah, that's a bit clumsy, have a penalty. Someone would have said, well, yeah, he has touched his head, therefore it's a yellow, but there are mitigating circumstances. Yeah. And yet what we've ended up with is a red card. So it could have been any one of those four things, and most people would have been accepting of it.
But also, I don't understand.
Well, on red, probably.
Yeah, but also, I don't understand, but, you know, the touch in the head, like it, you know, it happens all the time. I don't, you know, I remember it was, you know, was it the Lions, you know, when Warren Gatland said, when Razzy Erasmus put that video together, you know, the Lions could have done a video countering South Africa. You could do a video, I think there was, you know, someone was saying, and I didn't see this, but someone was saying when, you know, one of the players popped up and James Ryan got him right in the face in the middle of a ruck. You know, legend. I didn't see it. Lewis Ludlam. I mean,
but you can find this in every single
game. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So then there were rugby incidents. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't know. Like, I don't understand how you would clear someone out at a breakdown now without putting your head on their head if they're so low over the ball to hit them or still make a collision with their head. Like, I wouldn't know how else to do it because then you can't come into the ruck at a side angle to get the head underneath the ribs. So you'd have to go head on neck or shoulder on the back of his neck. That means there's a red card at every breakdown. I wouldn't know what to do. And obviously you would kind of try to adapt, but there are obvious collisions and moments in a high speed game that are going to get people. And I just don't think because you touch someone's head, you're always going to touch someone's head, you know, and I just don't think that is the be all and the end all. Do you know what I mean?
I do. It's another one of those incidents that we seem to spend a lot of time talking about in rugby at the moment, which is we're all slightly baffled.
But rest assured that nothing will change.
Well, I was going to say, what is the answer
no,
to
there
it?
Is no, no, rest assured. Rugby will change nothing.
I think it's damaging.
It is, but
nothing
will change.
It's damaging to the sport.
Nothing will change. Honestly, post this Six Nations, nothing will change. Apart from they'll fiddle around with some fucking rule to make the game a little bit faster or something like that. I can't, you know. There'll be nothing. We still haven't sorted out all the contact in training stuff. How long has that been going on? You know, unless I missed an edict from the World Rugby, they still have not decided around how much contact training teams can do. Holiday still not, you know, sorted out. Nothing will change. So it's just pointless. We'll just go around again and someone will get red card in a World Cup final. They'll get bullied to an inch of their life if it's particularly stupid and round and round we go again.
But I think that element of lottery that the game now has on a weekly basis is not a strength.
No, it's not. I do regard it, the best term, I regard it as a lottery. I have absolutely no emotion towards the game, and like you saw it, you're just like, I was just sitting at the screen, because that was bullshit. This is, it's just like, it just happens all the time now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's always some sort of mad, delayed. I mean, I'd love to see the number of times the fourth official is called into action now. That's gone up exponentially now.
Tell you what, let's throw it open. If you've got any wise suggestions, send us a little DM or a note or something. We'll leave a comment in the YouTube channel. How do we solve and get rid of the lottery element whilst fully acknowledging that the heads of players need to be protected, that we've got to look after those playing the game? But where is the line between protection and mitigating factors and enabling the sport to be what the sport is meant to be?
I don't know.
Who knows? The other thing I wanted to ask you about was England's fitness, which seems to be getting a huge sort of amount of flack at the moment. So Alan Walters is coming in from Leicester, and there are real high hopes. I used to see him on the touchlines when he was at Munster. He then took South Africa to the World Cup final and obviously worked to the trophy in 2019 and has now been in with the Tigers. Have you spotted this trend with England and fitness and blowing up in the last 20 minutes? And can you put your finger on why that would be in this current day and age when fitness and analysis, analytics, metrics are consistently measured?
I just think that's always the excuse when a team doesn't play well. I love Dai Young to bits, but it was his favourite drum to bang when Wasps wouldn't perform very well and you're not fit enough. It was nothing to do with fitness, I don't think. England, 2015, when we were the fittest we've ever been, every written journalist and Eddie Jones included criticised us for our fitness, said we weren't fit enough. And I was like, all we did was fitness. There is a limit to how much fitness you can do over everything else. You know, do you want to be flogging lads? You know, this is what I mean. There are different fitness metrics for each premiership team and what is acceptable, what's not, what your training load week looks like, what it doesn't, how many kilometres you run in the week, and whether some teams are asked to do fitness top-ups or not. You know, I remember under Eddie Jones, he felt that a lot of time fitness wasn't up to scratch. He would send us back to our clubs with work-ons. A lot of the clubs would just ignore them and disregard those work-ons. Someone like myself and a couple of the other lads would be quite keen to add a little fitness top-up, but it's a very fine balancing act between how attritional the game is on the weekend. Bear in mind, you play 80 minutes on a Saturday, takes you 2 days to recover. As if you're slightly older and you play in a certain position, you're probably by Tuesday still hanging. Wednesday, you start to feel good. Thursday, you know, might be a day off. Friday, you're okay. Saturday, go around again. You know, unless you're playing on sort of a wing and the ball never gets you, you're just sort of standing there. But even then, you run quite a lot of high-speed meters. I just don't believe it. I don't think it's an issue now. And I just think it's the easiest thing to point a finger at, and it becomes an absolute sideshow to the main event. You know, I remember having it out with a couple of journalists in 2015. I just literally messaged them going, what you're saying is utter shit, on my usual sort of direct style. And they're like, what do you mean? And I just said, you're talking shit. All we did, we went to Denver, went to altitude training, and were running until we couldn't run anymore. All we did was runways all the time. The reason England was shit is that we didn't ever do any fucking rugby. Do you know what I mean? And the selection wasn't great. And, you know, in Denver, we would do these things called runways all the time. And then we would go into
a runway. What is that?
Runways. It was like basically different shuttles, thing, you know, out five, back off, you know, length of field, and you'd run different distances. I mean, our test results from where we started to where we ended were astronomical. But every time we would do these shuttles, we then have to do a line out move. We're still waiting to finish that line out move. Now, it was people were too tired to throw it. Boys couldn't catch it. Boys would drop it first phase. We couldn't finish it. We just couldn't do it. And the ball in play time in that World Cup was the lowest it's ever been.
Yeah.
Fitness never came to the fore. It was much more about playing to win, much more about selection, much more about kind of the rugby. But, you know, the whole thing about that World Cup in particular was New Zealand were the fittest team in the world. We wanted to be like New Zealand. We had to do fitness. We were going to train at 125% of maximum. And by the time we got to the World Cup, we would be pinging. And they had graphs with flames and indiscernible numbers on it and shit like that. Like, you're up 5,000 quatrons versus, you know, whatever, genuinely. Yeah. And about, you're going to ping at this time. I'm still waiting to ping 9 years later. I'd never pinged.
And so I just think
it's madness. I do agree, what I said in my opening comments, which is ironic to your question, is that I think when players are with England, they get to a certain required level of intensity of training and high-speed meters. A lot of the metrics are measured in terms of accelerations. Eddie Jones used to bang on about your first 3 meters, how quickly you got off the floor and how quickly you accelerated. And when you first came into camp, having played premiership rugby, they would pretty much be down here. By the time you finished, you were up to what was required. That is why when you get into a World Cup camp, it will take you a while to get you up to that level, but you will be there. But there isn't a huge deficit. How can you possibly say that these Premiership players are less fit than their counterparts? You know, I would say the Irish guys, for me, you know, they get rested more and they don't have to play as much rugby. I don't know where you think you're going to squeeze more fitness in and how you can make players fitter when the week demands such an intensity. It's stupid. And it's normally written by people who know nothing about strength and conditioning. Honestly, it really fucks me off because I think we're talking about players actually need to do less, recover more, train smarter, and they'll play better. And if diminishing the last 20 minutes across the board, it's much more a psychological thing. I would ask yourself, what are you doing with this England team for the psychological stuff? Because that is the difference between sides. Fitness now, man, it's just a fucking sideshow. It's what written journalists, who know nothing about the game, just write, and what people talk about, and people who are from the outside looking in, oh, they're not fit, oh, look, they're all puffing. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you, I think there is no place for a fat rugby player anymore. There is no excuse to have a fat rugby player. So, you know, I think the old adage, you've got to have a bit of weight and depth, that's fine. But actually, if they were psychologically smarter, nutritionally better recovered, and training actually across the clubs was in a focus to help the England team be better, that's fine. I think some props can get away with it, but fat props, there's genuinely no need, you know, to have that. Unless you're like, you know, like that guy, Census Johnson, or the who's a massive guy, the French guy's 150 kgs, and also
Junior Antonio.
Yeah, yes.
He still gets about the
That's
paddock.
What I mean. If you can shift around like that, and also who's the guy?
Ben Tamiyafuna.
Yes.
He was a large lump.
He is an absolute dumper truck, yeah. Right? But, you know, he'd smoke you, he'd get around the field, but he had his limitations, but, you know, he's still able to move, so the power he would give you in the scrum. But apart from that, there's no excuse. And I think, I just know how backward so much of this stuff is.
This is an unfortunate segue, but you've led me there. I wanted to ask you about Dan Cole's 100th, but not as a fat prop.
Coley's not a fat prop, actually.
Tell me about Coley Bear fact that he is a centurion for his country. He's had to wait his time as well on
but
95,
what,
not
look, out. I mean, I was there all the way through with Coley, apart from obviously the last few years. You know, one of the driest people with a sense of humour ever, a real, real professional competitor. You know, I think
King of the Sappuccinos?
Very, very negative and dry, but yeah. Very amusing with it. I just think he's done so well to get that. And actually, I love the fact that Steve Ball has given that opportunity, and the fact that he's gone away where a lot of people could have gone, look, you know, I've achieved this in the game, and sort of rested on his laurels. He was brilliant for Leicester. He's upped his game. He's been playing some of his best rugby, I think. You know, England's been crying out for another kind of centurion prop to join Jason Leonard. I think we're going to get a few more over the line, yeah. You know, by the time the World Cup's finished, which again, you know, he's the only centurion apart. Sorry,
him
Jason Leonard was the only
for so
such
long.
A long time. Whereas yeah. New Zealand were just sort of people coming out Australia. Of people's woodworks. Yeah, yeah, Australia.
We've got three now. Yeah. Well, in the men's game. We've
yeah,
got a few
I just think... I just think it's brilliant. Couldn't be more pleased with him. And I think that puts him down to legendary status, which is something I'll never achieve.
Give us a little bit of, well, I was going to say optimism. Let me change that. Where are your levels of optimism? England 9-1 to win the Rugby World Cup. Would you put a pound on that? Are they too far off? Are there bits there that we've seen? We're seeing increasingly in sport at the moment a trend whereby teams have to arrive at the tournament with room for growth. And that was the case with England in the T20, Argentina at the Football World Cup, other examples elsewhere, in South Africa in 2019, actually, as well. They lost to New Zealand. Is there too much for England to do now? Or have they got a proper summer camp, a good draw, and the ability to make a real nuisance of themselves?
Okay. There is always an opportunity.
You're saying there's a chance.
I'm saying there is a chance. There is always an opportunity. I never back, you know, never go against the guys. I just think for me at the moment, there are better teams yeah. with more of a chance. There are teams that you think now have a mindset to win it. I think Ireland have a mindset to win it.
Yes.
Do I think Scotland have a mindset and consistently to win it? No.
Okay.
Not because I don't like Scotland. I think they're a very, very good side. They beat England, you know, whatever. I just don't think they have that at the moment.
Okay.
Do I think England have the mindset to win a World Cup and the ability to, that ruthlessness to win it? At this point in time, no. Do I think New Zealand have it? 100%. Do I think that France have it? Yes. Do I think Ireland have it? Yes. Do I think South Africa have it? Yes. Do I think Australia have it at the moment? No.
Okay.
But are you able to create that? Yes. But you're still going to be some way behind.
Very interesting. Okay. Shall we have a very quick word on France, who finished second but played some unbelievably good rugby recently? I mean, they are favourites for the tournament, predominantly off the back of that win over England. I mean, what is the danger for France at this point?
I think the danger is that the injury will be a problem. I think someone like Dupont going down and Tamat going down, could be a real issue. I just think that actually that loss against Ireland was the best thing that could have happened to that French side. And again, the cliche that you learn much more from defeat than you do a win. I think it would have reset their standards. I think it would have reminded them of their own fragility. I think it would have allowed, Sean Edwards and the rest of the coach to work their magic and reaffirm some of the stuff and raise standards. And I think that they'll become much more dangerous from it. I think New Zealand, again, were much more dangerous now from those losses, because it doesn't sit well with people. And I think that if they can stay fit, stay strong, I think they'll be right up there. And I think, do they have an X factor and ability that even Ireland don't possess? I think, yeah, maybe only by 10%, but there is a 10% that this French team individually can do stuff I don't think anybody can do, with that home support, with that bit of pressure, with that bit of magic, with everything geared to supporting them and helping them. Yeah.
The one thing I did think that was quite interesting was the Ireland-England game felt like a World Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
And whereas Ireland were supreme throughout against France, with all the pressure and the silverware on the touchline and knowing that France had gone top of the table with a bonus point win and all the expectation around a home, first ever home Grand Slam and Sexton's last game, for 60-odd minutes, you can just begin to see what pressure does to very, very good teams. We've seen it time and time again in World Cups past, New Zealand in 99, etc. It will be very interesting. It is not going to be a procession. And I sort of get quite excited about where, therefore, the big upset is going to come from. And I just think, under the gun, with no expectation, England are nowhere near where they want to be.
Yeah.
But I think they now have learned quite a lot. I think probably Farrell will go as 10. Manu is very important. Courtney comes back in. Tom Curry comes back in.
Maritoji turned up.
Maritoji turns up.
He's never played badly, but I thought he really raised the stakes on the way he played.
I think Adam Walters will come in and will change a lot of things behind the scenes. Yeah. I think Richard Wigglesworth comes in with Steve, who know each other extremely well. He's a great guy
as well. Sinfield, both of them emotional drivers off the field.
Exactly. And suddenly you just begin to think there isn't very much time, but in a tournament where, as we've already discussed, there are going to be elements of the lottery coming in under the radar with a bunch of belligerent characters who've had a hell of a rough time of it. They go there without expectation, but with a point to prove. They've got a good run of the draw.
Mm.
Who knows?
Yeah,
I'm an optimist. I'm an optimist.
No, but so am I. Look, I when I've retired, I have become much more about the story than the team. So I wanted Ireland to win because I thought it was brilliant. I like France doing well. I want New Zealand to come back even better. I want Australia under Eddie Jones to come out and be right up there. I want South Africa,
Scotland to shock the world.
That's what I mean. I want the jeopardy. I want that intensity. I'm not emotionally driven by any particular side. I think 100% that can happen. I think that it is very much interesting. Very interesting in regards to the psychological element, because it's the one thing in sport that is the most vital, but it's the one thing that a lot of teams neglect. And I wonder who will be able to manage that expectation in France, because Ireland, will they be able to keep it together with all the emotion that goes on? If they've
got that bogey of never having been past the quarterfinals before.
And then, but you're only going to deal with that at that particular time. And, do you ignore it? Do you pretend it doesn't go there? Do you overplay it? All of it is a subtle battle. Say, for example, they lost Johnny Sexton. What would happen? France lose Dupont. What happens? All of this stuff, I think, can really kind of start playing it into these teams. That's why the World Cup's such an exciting thing.
If the World Cup draw was done today, what would the pools look like?
Yes.
Pool A. France, Australia, Fiji, Uruguay, Namibia. I like that, France, Australia. Fiji, dangerous. Pool B. South Africa, England, Italy, Georgia, Portugal. Pool C. Ireland, Scotland, Japan, Tonga, Romania. and Pool D, New Zealand, Argentina, Wales, Samoa, Chile.
That is a dirty pool.
Is that more interesting than what we've got or not?
What was England's one again?
England's was South Africa, Italy, Georgia and Portugal.
Yeah, but who we got now?
We've currently got England, Japan, Argentina and Samoa and Chile.
Oh, that one's better now.
Yep. So what that obviously is, if the draw was done today, it would be far more balanced according to form lines. But I suppose when it was done, whatever it was 2 years ago, it felt balanced at that point. But the question is, should we be actually doing these draws nearer the time? Because currently you've got a pool with New Zealand, France, Italy, Uruguay, Namibia, and the one that everyone is really worried about, South Africa, Ireland, Scotland, Tonga, Romania. And then England have got Japan, Argentina, Samoa, Chile, and Wales have got Australia, Fiji, Georgia. Actually, that's not an easy, still not an easy group for Wales.
No, Wales are stuffed anyway.
Wales, Australia, Fiji, and Georgia. They lost to Georgia in November. Fiji have knocked them out in 2007. Portugal are probably going to make up the numbers. And Australia.
We need to get Portugal in the Six Nations.
We do. A little bit of Madeira.
Oh, I love that.
I don't know why I put that in, but I just thought it was
interesting. Because you're an absolute Norse and you love these little things.
That's for the two Norses who message me weekly. Right, that is probably it, I think, as far as discussion points. I don't know how this has happened. Yes. Mystic Mike's Predictor Game. What a tournament. What fun we have had with our Predictor Game, delivered to you by our friends from City Index, one of the leading providers of commission-free spread betting across thousands of financial markets. I don't quite know how this has happened, and I'd love to say that a stop clock's right twice a day, but I think over 5 rounds and 15 matches, I can understand why Tins has gotten a plane and gone to LA, because frankly, you have come out on top, and by some way, oh my God almighty, have you read this?
No, I haven't seen it now.
So, I am extremely disappointed to have come 1,546th.
Out of how many?
2,700. Okay. So I was below halfway.
Okay.
Tins was 1,447.
Right. Right.
And you were... Is there a digit missing?
Sorry,
on this?
No.
You were 27th.
27th, right? Out of how many? 2,000 something?
2,737.
And you lot got the audacity to say I know nothing about rugby. Turns out I know a lot. Out of 2,000, whatever it was, I'm an absolute...
737.
Yeah, 2,727. I know a lot.
You can have yourself a free Jeeb in our t-shirt. Did you get every... You must have got every selection. You got one game wrong.
One game, Alex. And honestly, I've been DJing. I'm on my own tour. I'm consistently working. And this would have honestly been a five-second moment. And that Craig's lucky that I've even saved his number and know who he was to reply to the messages. And I have. And I've cast a little bit of my huge intelligence onto this. And I came 27th.
See, if Johnny Sexton had come 27th out of 273... 2,737. He'd gone, thank you to the team, and it's all about the people that support me and provide me with the information.
It was all me.
It's a team game.
About me.
Yeah.
That's enough about me. Let's talk about me.
Me, myself, and I. Well done.
Thank you.
Gobsmacked. I'm surprised. Thank you, City Index, as well.
Really appreciate all your support.
I'm thoroughly disappointed.
Yeah, you should be, because you are an utter Norse. You live and breathe. You honestly think about rugby and little, you know, games and stats and figures and pool stage rugby. You care. And I've defeated you.
You are such a twat when things go well. It's actually painful.
That's why it never goes well.
No.
But when it does.
Right. Well done, Hask. Thank you, big penis. I'm delighted for you. We must give a big shout out to our winner, who is from the Welsh Valleys, and it's called Diarrhea.
Shut up. No. Well done, though. Well done for getting your name. Well done for betting that you would win and come out with a comedy name.
Well done, Diarrhea. Delighted for you.
Shut up!
Who, after 5 weeks of predicting, has come out on top.
You changed your name by Depot, if that was your name. If that's your real name, I really want to apologise for you, but your life must have been so difficult that me giving you a bit of shit on this podcast, see what I've done there, would be absolutely no problem. But Diarrhea, well done.
D-A-I, capital R-E-E-A.
Yes, it's a fake name. There's no way someone's legitimately called somebody Diarrhea. I mean, because you...
I now have to bring in Dominoes, so we need to sort of put some interlude music between the two. For our dough baller of the week, we are going to give it to Johnny Sexton. There isn't really anyone else who needs a pizza this week, is it?
I mean, he needs a bit of size and a slow piece of
snake shoulders. Let's put some pizzas on help him get some shoulders. Well done, and thank you to Dominoes. Our dough baller of the week is the one and only Johnny Sexton. In fact, we're going to give him all three £50 vouchers. We could have gone with Dupont, who was sensational. We could have gone with Dan Sheehan, a member of the Front Row Club, who went very well. A nod to Blair Kinghorn.
Kieran Healy as well. He's been a fantastic
Kieran
servant.
Healy is a servant of Irish rugby. Why did we give £350 vouchers to
Manu?
Johnny's.
He was great.
Manu did well on comeback. Jack Willis went well.
Yes.
Bar the yellow. Freddie Stewart, again, the student, needs a pick-me-up pizza after being robbed. But I think we'll give all three to Johnny and he can distribute them to Kieran Healy and Peter O'Mahony, the other silver surfers in Team Ireland.
Yeah.
And they can have a pizza.
The ashtray blondes.
The ashtray blondes. Thank you, Domino's, for all your love and support over the course of the Guinness Six Nations. A reminder for you rugby fans, the Price Slice deal is ongoing. £8 for a small, £10 for a medium, £12 for a large, and £50 if you are Johnny Sexton in terms of credit. Go and have
fun. And we've had no Domino's pizzas this entire Six Nations.
Well, if you were the dough baller of the week...
Well,
you,
if I put my mind to the dough baller of the week, I probably could have won it. Like
you
I
could
won
have
it,
had a voucher, but you went very well in the Mystic Mike prediction game and instead you get a t-shirt. So don't complain. Be thankful for what you've got.
How about Mystic Hask next time?
Right, from Mystic Hask to the GBNR cruise because, and this is going to be a lot of fun, we're actually going for a filming date in Ibiza in May. We are looking for fans of GBR to come and join us on our special GBNR cruise, which is the cruise to beat all cruises, with our good friends from Infinity Sports Travel. Hastins and I are going sailing for two of the biggest weekends of the Rugby World Cup, the opening weekend of the tournament and quarter final weekend. You'll be able to talk to Hask all about his predictions, his analysis, given that he's proven himself in the Mystic Mike Predictor game. It's essentially going to be a floating luxury hotel with all-inclusive food and drink and a rugby fan village hosted by us.
Yeah, just don't lie to people because I don't think you're going to get that much access to me. Like, I think you might do. You might see me in passing. You'll see me up at the decks. You'll see me on stage. Most of the time, I'll be behind
James
some burly
is meeting
security
and greeting
guards.
All 4,000 fans on board. He's going to come to each and every one of your cabins for an intimate
if you're fit.
15-minute debrief in order for you to be able to talk
if
to him and ask him
fit.
Anything you like.
If you're not, if you're a barber
and the more
wearing
he pisses
red trousers,
off, the longer it's going to be. So
if you're wearing a gilet, if you're wearing a gilet on a cruise, I probably won't be speaking to you.
Why would you be wearing a gilet on a cruise in the Mediterranean?
What is the bet? What is the betting that we see some rugby fans stand up with gilets on this cruise? I would almost put money on some people turning up with elbow patches
if you,
and tweed.
If you're wearing a gilet on the cruise, you get an hour with Haskell yes. in your cabin to talk about any of the things.
Have
that
you
like
seen
to.
How sick the cruise boat is?
Yes, I
it
have.
It is unbelievable, and the Ibiza themed. Area where I'll be DJing is insane. I right. cannot wait. All inclusive as well. I mean, I'm going to eat and drink my way to oblivion.
Well, we're going to have to take a little velvet rope that will just sort of hover in front of you.
I'd just rather have security who just fend people off.
Right.
But I would, I'm very, very, I think this is the best thing GBR has done and I, or will have done. Sunshine, unbelievable. It's going to have cinema,
casino, spa, gym, comedy club.
Just imagine that.
And 17 restaurants.
How good. And I will work my way around every 17 every one of those 17 restaurants. Right. And we're DJing and we're doing theatre tours and there's food and there's drink
and
there's VIP.
And you're meeting 4,000 guests on board.
And I will not be meeting 4,000 guests.
It'll be like Hunt the Hask. It's
Hunt the Hask. Where's
we'll
Wally?
We'll do Hunt the Hask and you'll get like 2 minutes to hide. And then it's like sardines. All 3,999 people have to get into the same space, and the 4,000th person gets thrown overboard.
Yeah, sounds perfect. Let's do it.
GBNR listeners get 10% off any Rugby World Cup France 2023 package when booked before the end of March. You haven't got very long. T's and C's apply. You just need to quote IST Good Bad Rugby when booking via phone or email. You can't get the discount if you book online, but do head over to infinitysportstravel.com/GBR to find out more.
That's the most unique, that will be the most unique thing that's happening in the World Cup. I can't think of, I have never heard of anything else like that happening. Yeah, your Gullivers, all that nausea stuff, but that's a cruise with 17 restaurants, a casino, a spa, and me DJing. I mean, I don't know how you just don't get everyone in the world to sign up.
I said, you buy one, you get one free.
You buy one, you get one free.
The Women's Six Nations is not too far away as well. As Tin said last week, if you're slightly struggling with the boys and their toys, don't fret. You can lift your spirits by supporting the Red Roses, who are back in action next weekend as the TikTok Women's Six Nations kicks off. England have got Scotland first up at a sold-out Kingston Park in Newcastle. If you haven't got tickets, don't worry. You can catch the action live on BBC Two, 4:45 in the afternoon. 36,000 tickets have been sold for this year's standoff between England and France. Retribution, please, ladies. The first standalone women's fixture at Twickenham. Let's hope we can get that number up.
I think it should be a sellout. I want to see a sellout.
Yeah.
It should be. I don't understand why, you know, like 36,000 is amazing, but you need to get down and watch that game.
Yeah.
Even though Scouse is not replaying, definitely buy some tickets for that, because that would be amazing to get a full sellout and to celebrate that moment. It really would make, you know, I think the whole tournament to have that moment.
One other line from the Red Roses, and it's a massive doffing of the cap from us to her, because the most capped English player of all time, the Red Roses skipper at the World Cup, Sarah Hunter, a World Cup winner in her own right, of course, has announced her retirement. Well done, Sunter. The girls over on The Good, The Scars and The Rugby in partnership with Vodafone have previewed the whole tournament alongside their good friend, the brilliant commentator Nick Heath. No doubt they will be paying tribute to a remarkable player in her own right as well in Sarah and her glorious career. Don't miss the inside scoop. And Scars reveals the untold stories about last year's Le Crunch as well. Well done, Sarah Hunter, on a glorious career. Hopefully we'll speak to you before too long. Go and check out The Good, The Scars and The Rugby. And they're going to be with you every Thursday throughout the tournament, so you will not miss a beat. So subscribe to that wherever you do your podcasting if you haven't already. You have got a very special show next week. I'm quite disappointed, actually, because I used to work with this man a very long time ago on fishing. I used to present Fishomania and the poker at Sky, would you believe? That's where my career began, and no doubt it
amazing
well
how
end.
Both of you, one's gone one way and one's gone the other way.
I like to think our careers have followed very similar trajectories.
I would
actually
say you would be...
I'm at the bottom of the pond.
Deluded would be the word.
And he is the big fish.
Yeah.
Next week, you are talking to the one and only Eddie Hearn, which is going to be very interesting. We're obviously leaving all things Six Nations behind. We're going to chat to Eddie ahead of the Anthony Joshua Jermaine Franklin fight on Saturday, April the 1st. But I'm fascinated to know as well his views on the marketing of rugby. He's actually spoken about this at length before, I think specifically around rugby league. But as one of the great promoters in modern day sport, you're going to have to get into him. How would you change, or how would you speed up, or how would you turn around the big ship that is Rugby Union? Just a reminder, and if you like your boxing, it would be fantastic to see AJ back doing what he does best. He's got a lot to prove, but DAZN is the only place to watch AJ, who has joined the Ultimate Boxing Lineup, which is available on any device, TV, console, tablet, mobile, and for Sky customers, channel 429. You can get it included as part of your monthly DAZN subscription, and you can sign up at DAZN.com. It is DAZN.com for those of you who perhaps are coming to DAZN for the first time. But that is where AJ will be fighting on Saturday, April the 1st. Are you looking forward to that with Eddie?
I am very much looking forward to that. I've always wanted to meet him. He seems like a great character. I love what he says and his character, you know, the way he promotes things. And I just think he's very interesting. I've seen him in a couple of restaurants, but I was too shy to say hello.
Oh.
He once smiled at me, but it could have been indigestion. I don't know, but we'll see.
Do you think my next bout could be on DAZN.com?
No. No.
No. Okay. At least I've had a fight.
Yeah, you have, yeah, right. You keep reminding us of that. Fine.
You know? Well, you talk a big game. Yeah. That's next week. I'm very interested to see how you get on with Eddie, actually. I think there's a lot that we could learn in our sport from what he's doing with his. I've just put my notes down without actually saying goodbye, which is what I'm going to do right now. Don't forget to subscribe to The Lock-In if you haven't already, the extra pod we put out most weeks for the super fans. This week we've talked about Cadbury's cream eggs, death, and box sets. And if that doesn't drive you to subscribe, I don't know what will. The Good, the Bad and Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Well done, Johnny Sexton, and well done, Ireland. The show is produced by Shara Kilgallen. Have a lovely rest of your week. Well done, James.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Good, yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell, and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.
You got showers like a snake.